Radio Influence. The future is now.
Flavor, flavor, please tell your neighbors. Ian Beckles with flavor in your ear. Wake up, sports, music, and fashion. Best of podcasting. What's going on now and what's soon to happen? Be sure to stick around, no fast forward or skipping. Dropping jewels, you don't want to miss them. Make sure you listen. Ian Beckles with the flavor in your ear. The voice of the people's here.
All right, here we go again. Flavor in the Ear. This is Ian Beckles. This has been fun. The new podcast world is now part of my world. I've been in radio for a while, and I'm enjoying the podcast, doing my own thing, hopping around at different restaurants, getting you guys hip to the wonderful food that's going on around here. And I'm at a restaurant today. It's called Eulalie. I think you guys have heard of it before, on the Riverwalk, in a new area over here, right around Seminole Heights, downtown. You can't go wrong. I mean, it's this part of the area is growing so darn fast, and Richard Garnsmart and the guys here at Eulalie kind of jumped on it before everybody else, and then everything is kind of, you know, developing around them. I know they have the Waterworks Park next door, and they've extended the Riverwalk to where you can literally go from my house, which is all the way the Gandy, McDill area. You can ride your bike all the way here to Eulalie, and I did that just the other day. It's a nice little ride over here. You can come over here, get some oysters, have a drink, and then come on back home. But Eulalie is the spot. Richard Garnsmart is the owner. We know that name. A very prominent name here in the Bay Area. Owns Eulalie. Also owns the Columbia Restaurant, which if you lived in Tampa Bay Area, you do know of the Columbia Restaurant. I would say that is part of Tampa Bay lore. If you talk about Tampa Bay, I think you have to bring the Columbia up at some point. And the Columbia is one of those restaurants where every time you go, you're like, damn, how come I don't come here more often? Because the food is fantastic and consistently fantastic. And that's what Richard Garnsmart has been doing for a long time. Eulalie has wonderful food. I'll have my boy Jeff Houck, one of the marketing and PR managers. He's going to be sitting in with me, very knowledgeable when it comes to food. I've had him on my radio show quite a few times. He's a big man on campus, figuratively and literally, because he's a big man. But he knows his food, and he knows about restaurants. So Richard Garnsmart, Columbia Restaurant. He owns Goody Goody, which just opened up in the Hyde Park area, which is fantastic. I had a burger there the other day. Excellent. Also Cha-Cha Coconut. So Richard Garnsmart has his mitts and a bunch of different things going on in this area. Podcast is one thing I do. I also do a little radio, 102.5 The Bone. This Sunday, and this is Thursday, we're taping it, and you guys will be listening to on Friday, but this Sunday we'll be at the District Tavern in Channelside area, and I'm going to have Derek Brooks, the great Derek Brooks, Hall of Famer, hanging out from 11 to 1, Steve Isbitz from Joe Bucks Fan, and Andrew Machota from Newtown Connections is going to be hanging out there at the District Tavern. We'll be hanging out, having some Touch Vodka, drinking some Bud Lights, and having a good time. And we make it a party, that's for sure. So we're going to talk a lot of food today. It's going to be food heavy because that's what we do since we're in wonderful restaurants. Last week we were at Anise. Anise has fantastic food, and Eulalie does as well. Now, we're going to talk a little food later with Jeff Houck, but I got to talk about something that I watched last week, and I actually rewatched it yesterday. It's so amazing when you watch these documentaries on O.J. Simpson and the trial. Made in America was the name of it. It was actually an 8-hour special, okay? I think it came in four different parts. But it was O.J. Made in America. And it was riveting because I lived through it. And as you live through it, you don't really see all the different details that were going on at the time. And when they break it down scientifically and they go through the different stages, it is amazing what happened in that trial. And I don't think I ever really understood the verdict until I watched this 8-hour special. And then it completely made sense. I mean, 100% made sense to me. Looking at what went through, or what OJ went through, you know, he grew up in the hood. We all know that. You know, you grew up in the hood. There's not many white people there. So, you know, he was embraced by black people. You know, part of the hood. Understandable. Went to a junior college. Ended up going to USC. Was a star there. Turned things around. You know, won the Heisman. You know, beat some of the great teams. And then all of a sudden, he was embraced by the white people. Okay? And he really almost alienated himself from black people. You know, you looked and saw who he was hanging around with. And as he became a star, as he got bigger, he alienated himself from a lot of people he grew up with. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know. But, you know, basically, he was hanging around mostly white people, which, like I said, is fine. That's all good. So he was embraced by the white people. Then when all the shenanigans and tomfoolery went on with him and the alleged murder of Nicole and Ron Goldman, all of a sudden, he was black again. And the black people were embracing him. And after watching this 8-hour special, it finally made sense to me why this whole thing came about. And one of the jurors that was there summed it up perfectly. Okay, there was an old black lady. She was probably 70 years old, okay? And they interviewed her after the verdict, which was he was innocent or not guilty. He certainly wasn't innocent, but he was not guilty of the murder of Nicole and Ron Goldman. When they interviewed this juror, so the 70-year-old black woman, they asked her point blank, is the OJ verdict payback for the Rodney King verdict? And she looked in the camera, and it took no more than 1 second, and she said, yes. And I was like, dang, that's kind of crazy. But then they go back and they rewind the whole thing, and they show the way things were going and the progression of it and going through the Rodney King verdict. And when you go back to the Rodney King verdict and you see the way it happened, I completely understand the OJ verdict. Because when you went through the Rodney King verdict, you have to understand the Rodney King verdict was just one situation that happened that had been happening for ages and decades and eons in those neighborhoods, okay? Compton and Watts. You know, police had been abusing black people forever. So when that Rodney King thing came about and we finally saw it on videotape, first of all, everybody was like, oh my God, look at how the white cops are treating the black people. And it, for us, it was a shock. But for black people, they're like, dang, this has been going on forever. So when that verdict came about and all those guys were innocent, okay, and then you saw the LAPD, they come up and they basically say, well, they went by the book. Our policemen didn't do anything wrong. As a black person in Watts or Compton, don't you think you would think to yourself, well, damn, if that's by the book, I'm in trouble. Because they were beating Rodney King. And listen, you can say, oh, Rodney King did this and that. Whatever, okay? They were justifying beating Rodney King's Achilles tendons while he's laying on the ground face down. If that's by the book, then let's amend the book. Let's change the book and let's change the system. So this is what black people were watching. So when the verdict came up with Rodney King, black people were thinking, damn, how the hell are we going to win? How are we ever going to win if that's okay by the courts? Okay, so let's fast forward a little bit. Now we have O.J. Simpson up there on the stand, okay? And he had a lot of black jurors, a lot of black jurors. And throughout the way, they were showing how the lawyers were manipulating things and basically flat out lying. They brought the jurors through O.J. Simpson's house, and O.J.'s lawyers switched all the pictures in his house that were of him and white people, which was 90% of the pictures. They switched all the pictures to him with him and black people. Once again, jurors, okay, black jurors. He wanted to convince to the black jurors that O.J. Simpson was black through and through. Like I said, even though earlier he was alienating some of his black friends and his neighborhood. So after all of that, the lawyers are lying and manipulating the jury. And when it was all said and done, what happened with O.J. really was the same thing that happened with Rodney King. The system failed, okay? It failed. And for all those years, you never saw somebody of the law, especially white policemen, you've never saw them going down for abusing black people. Now there was a situation where a black man was trying to get off killing and abusing a couple white people. Black people didn't care whether he did it or not. They just wanted the system to work on their behalf. And it did. That's it. And when I watched it, I'm thinking, damn, at the time when people are cheering, I'm thinking, that's crazy to cheer. But then I'm thinking, I didn't grow up like them. I didn't grow up with, you know, scared to leave my house and thinking that my children are going to get beaten in the street. And it's got to be scary when you see somebody not retaliating, getting beat, and then everybody's saying it's okay. So what was crazy, if you love, you know, suspense and whatever, I mean, they've made a lot of different shows about O.J. Simpson. This one here, Made in America, and I think they played on ESPN. I know they're playing it on Viceland. Do yourself a favor and watch that. There's some things about O.J. that I didn't know. One of which was his dad was gay. His dad was gay, never came out and said he was gay. Nobody ever talked about it, but everybody knew that OJ's dad was gay. Think about a black man in the 70s. You weren't allowed to be gay, okay? So OJ had to go through that. Marcus Allen took his girl, man. Marcus Allen, who was a younger version of OJ Simpson, took his girl. That's got to be a tough situation. He lost a kid along the way. One of his daughter drowned. So OJ went through a lot. And if you look at and you listen to all the testimonies, they all said the same thing. Every one of them said the same thing. When he got mad, it looked like he glossed over and turned into somebody else. So he turned into a monster, pretty much. And OJ got away with it. He got away with it. All the different lawyers along the way, they became rock stars or got dogged out in a community real, real bad. You look at Marsha Clark, you know, she became somewhat of a rock star. I know Darden, I think his name was. He was hated in his community because he was against O.J. Simpson. F. Lee Bailey was a pimp from the beginning. But there was so much going on. Lance Ito became a rock star. And then you think back to that white Bronco chase, and you had O.J. Simpson in the car with a gun, and that thing lasted hours upon hours. What happens if a normal person drives down the street in a car with a gun? They're going to sideswipe that guy and get him off the road. O.J., they let O.J. Simpson get all the way home, which was crazy. And he sat in the car with the gun by himself for hours until it became dark. And then OJ came out, and nobody really got a chance to see what was going on because it was dark out. And what was crazy when this was all said and done, when you look at the prosecution, you look at the police work, when you look at Furman, there was so much negligence going on in the police, in the LAPD, that it was scary, okay? And when Furman came out and said he's never used the N-word before, and they had him pretty much saying all ends about 10 different, 20 different, 50 different times, his credibility was pretty much done. And they have Furman on this little documentary boo-hooing about how he lost all his good friends. And, well, dude, don't use the N-word so easily, okay? You are going to lose some of your good friends, hopefully, anyways. But if you guys love good viewing, you got to go back and watch that O.J. Simpson Made in America. I've watched it two or three times in the last little while. I'm going to go back and watch it again here real soon. You know, I'm going to flip it a little bit. Let's do a little food, man. I'm here at Eulalie hanging out right on the Riverwalk. I said I take my bike here every once in a while. The Armature is opening up here, and we have Jeff Houck's going to roll up in here and let us know about all the goings on in this area. Like I said, Jeff's been around for a long time, knows a lot about food, likes to eat food like myself. It's good to have knowledge. I've had him on my radio show quite often. Good morning, sir. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, sir.
Now, I said your title is the marketing and PR manager, one of them.
I am one of the marketing PR managers for Columbia Restaurant Group. Yeah, and that includes Columbia Restaurant and all the, you know, seven restaurants and cafes we have, as well as Ulele, Goody Goody, and Cha Cha Coconuts.
Nice. I was just talking to Keith, and he's talking about opening up more Goody Goody in the airport.
Yeah. So in the next month or so, cross your fingers. Mm-hmm. You know how the Tampa International Airport has been including all these local brands, kind of localize the food. You know, because up until a couple years ago, the impression you had going through Tampa International was, hey, look, there's pizza. You know,
it wasn't much,
and it was like Sbarro. You know. So they've really done an amazing job, and they have this $1 billion expansion, and they've included three of our properties, including Ulele, Goody Goody, and now a new concept we have called Café con Leche.
Nice.
Uh-huh.
Nice.
Coffee and churros.
Oh, man.
Coffee and churros.
Right on the move.
Oh, my goodness. So anyway, so that's a new concept for it, but we already have the Columbia and the Delta Air side. This is going to be three clustered together in the Southwest Air side, and that'll open. We're expecting it to open probably the third week of March.
Amazing. Now, yeah. Richard Gonsmart is, when we talk about Tampa and the lore of Tampa, his name has to come up. I mean, a Columbia restaurant has to come up. I mean, if you talk about the history of it, that's where all the gangsters used to hang out, the mafia back in the day?
You know, everybody hung out there.
Yeah, they did.
You know, Marilyn Monroe had a meltdown in the bathroom one time with Joe DiMaggio.
Nice.
And Lula May, who was our restroom attendant for over 50 years, patted her on the back and said, honey, he ain't worth those tears.
That's funny. She's not still there, is she?
No. Okay. She retired and she's passed on. But you can see Lula May's chair. If you walk into one of the entrances, there's Lula May's chair that she sat in for so long.
Nobody else sits in it?
Nobody else sits in that.
I would never sit in that.
You know, and Babe Ruth, Traficantes. If you saw the movie The Infiltrator, the guy had a lot of his meetings at the Columbia. So
absolutely.
The bottom line is that everybody goes to the Columbia, you know, whether you're famous, infamous, just having, you know, hunger pains. You know, everybody has a good time and learns a little about Tampa history and Tampa food, and it's a good thing.
Now, I took my mother there. My mother has passed ever since, but I took her to Columbia a while ago. She ranted and raved about the food, and then they had castanets.
The flamenco dancers.
She was giddy after that. Do you still do the flamenco dances?
We absolutely do. Six nights a week. I grew up in a time where most restaurants had live entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, you know, somebody on an acoustic guitar singing, you know, Margaritaville. It was real live, you know, big show kind of things. Lenny D, I don't know if you know that name from the Beaches.
It sounds familiar.
He was like, you know, he was like the king of the Beaches, man. It was dinner show kind of stuff. This is similar to that in that, you know, it's a celebration, obviously, of Spanish culture. But the Tampa Bay Flamenco Company performs there, and they just do amazing shows six nights a week, sometimes two shows a night in our Siboney room. And it's an experience. You know, going to the Columbia is great. You have lunch, get the Cuban, the black beans, whatever. You know, get the paella.
Mm-hmm.
But to see it in that kind of environment, it's like time travel, man. It's a different time when that whole experience mattered, and not just sort of feeding yourself.
Sure. See, now I'm putting together an event, okay, in the next little while, and I want it to be Tampa through and through. Tampa Bay through and through.
Yeah.
I mean, I want it to have a Tampa feel. I'm thinking right now, we got to have the Columbia represented. Maybe bring that salad. What's the name of that salad?
1905 salad. Salads in America, you know, by USA Today.
I looked it up, and you can get the recipe for it.
Yeah.
And I did it at home, and it was good. Uh-huh. Not the same, though.
It's, you know, there's something about eating it at the Columbia, and it is a great salad. You know, there's a story about how when we were opening our Columbia in Celebration near Orlando, we hired a chef, and the chef was about to open the restaurant, and we found out he changed it from iceberg lettuce to arugula. And that's like painting a mustache on Beyonce. You don't do that.
No,
man.
You don't do that. Okay? No.
So we had a discussion. He was like, I will never use lettuce. Well, thanks for coming by. And his number two stepped up.
Gone.
And now he's the corporate chef for all of Columbia. You have to respect what people like.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, that mix of ingredients is just, I mean,
it's
unforgettable. And eating at the Columbia adds even more flavor.
No doubt. What we should do is have a little Columbia love and bring some of those, you know, flamenco dancers out there.
Yeah.
We'll definitely talk about that. Now, Ulele's been open for how long?
A little bit over 2 years. We opened up August 2014.
Slam tour. I heard you guys are slammed almost all the time in this place.
It is all the time.
And
it's, you know, the thing is that we keep kind of making, even 2.5 years into it, we keep making little adjustments here. Like, we just added an outdoor bar.
I saw that.
And it's really more for, you know, people who like to come and they hang at Ulele. They'll play, you know, beanbag toss out on the lawn. Mm. They let the kids run around because they've been over at the water park or whatever. It's sort of like how to make Ulele more approachable for casual kind of having a beer, having a cocktail, whatever. Mm. You know, we got a limited menu out there that you can have a burger or whatever. And it's, we keep adding things onto it and it still keeps getting bigger, and it's just, it's an amazing story from a restaurant perspective, because restaurants, you know, right now are kind of, they're trudging through it, and you know, as people's tastes change and their behaviors change, and you know, everybody's ordering, you know, Uber to deliver their pizzas and whatnot.
You guys do Uber?
No, we don't.
You don't do
Uber?
No,
we don't.
Why?
Because we think the food tastes better here.
Okay. You don't want to cheapen the product.
Well, it doesn't, it doesn't, it's not the same experience.
Makes sense.
But the other thing is that, you know, from a perspective of what's happening here in Tampa Heights, because I already say Seminole Heights, and we're close.
So this is Tampa Heights.
This is Tampa Heights.
How far is Seminole Heights from here? A mile?
It's a 5-minute drive north.
Okay.
So we're closer to you know, downtown, between Seminole Heights and downtown Tampa. A lot of us consider us a downtown Tampa restaurant, and it's not far off from that.
It's close.
It's a 10-minute walk from the Curtis Hickson Park.
Well, I rode my bike here the other day from Gandy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No
so,
big deal.
Yeah.
So anyway, the thing is about this restaurant is that it proved that this neglected part of Tampa, that there was this appetite to have this new kind of connection to the water, to the neighborhood, the history that's here. I mean, without you know, Ulele, and this is not bragging, you wouldn't have the refurbishment of the armature over here and all the residential that's coming, everything that's happening over on Franklin Street with the Rialto. And, you know, without Ulele, you don't really have this sort of revitalization in this neighborhood to prove that it's possible.
Understand.
And so, you know, our job here is not only, you know, to kind of represent the Gonsmart family and the history of food in this area. It's, you know, this was done in conjunction with the refurbishment of Ulele Spring. This was done in relationship to the city rebuilding Waterworks Park.
Talk to me about Ulele Spring. I mean, that's where the name came from, correct?
Well, this building was, at one point, one of the first three water plants for the city of Tampa.
Okay.
And that's what this was. We're sitting right now in this building on top of all these cisterns and whatnot that that pumped water out of the spring. So right next to us, you'll see Ulele Spring flowing into the Hillsborough River. Now, from where the restaurant sits all the way out to the seawall, before we moved in here, it was covered in just dirt. It was covered in earth. So they dug it all out, created the lagoon. Now you have manatees swimming up into the lagoon, things like
that.
You know, it's a healthy, vibrant spring that was really neglected. So in a lot of ways, it's sort of a metaphor for what's going on right now. It's beautiful. It's lush. It's got its own little ecosystem with turtles and fish and water birds and all that kind of stuff. But then you have Waterworks Park that, you know, there's events there. The Cattleman's Ball was
just
there.
Was the park here first?
The park was always there.
But Ulele had already been a thought at that time.
It was kind of isolated because the Riverwalk didn't run up to it.
Correct.
So once they finished the park, then the Riverwalk was finished, then you had a destination. But you also have a place, you know, where families bring their kids in the water park. We have, you know, concerts and things like that, movies out in the park. It's become, you know, this whole organism here. Like, for instance, this weekend, we'll be hosting a showing of Field of Dreams here on our lawn.
Really?
We did Home Alone during December, and we had, like, 350 people out in lawn chairs watching a free movie out on the lawn, so we wanted to do it again.
That's not a bad thing.
Yeah, this is this Sunday.
They're eating your food and drinking your alcohol. That's not a bad thing.
You know what? Even better than that, it's a place that people feel comfortable to come and hang out, sit on a blanket for a night with their kids.
Sure.
You know, the night we did it with Home Alone, it was the same night as the boat parade, the holiday boat parade. And they basically, everybody from the boat parade just kind of came over and sat down on the lawn, had a movie, had an evening.
Beautiful.
You know? And the best part about it was, I think, that you had people coming from the Tampa Heights neighborhood with lawn chairs and everything. You just saw people streaming out of that part of town. It's like, oh, okay, this has an identity now, you know?
No doubt.
So it's a restaurant, it's great food, it's a great experience, but it's bigger than that.
Now, you talked about, you know, Ulele being kind of the pioneer of this area. I agree. I think Richard Gonsmart understands the progression of Tampa Bay, okay? And it was inevitable that everything's going to come this way. And it's inevitable that it comes this way, and in downtown, eventually, when you look down the way, it's going to be attached to Seminole Heights. And everything in between is going to be kind of linked together. Mm-hmm. This is kind of the way the money is heading.
Well, there's inevitable, and then there's quick inevitable.
Yeah.
And Richard's a catalyst.
Yeah.
And so when he put, you know, basically we got these for, I believe, like $2 or $3. We got the building for $2 or $3, and we thought it was going to be a $2 million restaurant.
$2 or $3? What does that mean?
Like, the city sold it to us
for $2 or $3
because it was in such bad shape.
Okay.
And basically,
that's a good start.
We made all the infrastructure adjustments to this. We had to dig up the footer, clean everything out. There was all kinds of, you know, it was an industrial place. It was the last time the city
used it. Was the building here?
Oh, the building was here. So the city basically said, we'll give you this building. Now, inside of it, there are burn marks on the cement from where homeless people have come in and built fires.
Okay.
There's stuff from when the city used it as a garage. There's doors from when the police used it briefly. I mean, it was a bunch of different things, mm-hmm. but it was neglected. So we came in. We thought it was going to cost a couple $1 million like any restaurant you know, this size does. It wound up costing close to $6
million. $6
million
to refurbish it?
To make a restaurant for $6
million,
you gotta pray that you're in business a long time.
A long time, yeah.
And the first year we were open, we not only made that, we made more. And then the second year was even better than the first year.
Oh, God
and,
bless.
And the projections for this year is enormous. So what that tells us is there was not only an appetite for the restaurant and this type of restaurant. People wanted a place that they could point to and say, that's where our food is headed. That's where you want to see Tampa? Well, mm-hmm. we got to take you to Columbia because that's Tampa.
Sure.
Now you have Eulalie and people say, that was history. This is the future.
I love that.
So Richard was really the catalyst who saw it. I mean, you look on the walls here. You look down right over there, Ian, on that one wall and see all the arrowheads. Those are arrowheads that Richard and his brother Casey used to collect on this river down on the shore, Indian arrowheads. That he kept in his collection. You'll see him in the bar. They're embedded in the bar.
So he's digging in the water for arrowheads.
He lived about two blocks from here. And he knows this area. And he knows what it used to be and what it is now, obviously, is a different thing.
Sure.
But he understands what the appeal is here because, as a child, he knew what the appeal. He knew where the magic was. And now it's back, and it's back, and it's exploding.
No doubt. Now, let's talk a little bit about the food here. And I ate here way back when you guys first opened.
Sure.
Now I'm going to come back and experience a whole lot. I've heard oysters. And I'm an oyster fan, okay? I love oysters.
Sure.
I mean, I love them, okay? I dream about them. Charbroiled, raw, doesn't matter, po' boys, the whole nine yards.
I can't even imagine an Ian Beckles oyster dream.
I mean, seriously, I mean, that's, and it was a wet dream, too.
They're
I
gotta
great. Be honest
well,
with you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Salty.
It'd be hard to have a dry oyster dream. You don't want a dry oyster, you want a
Thanks
wet oyster.
For bringing it down.
Yes. But why are Eulalie's oysters so, why are they superior? Because I keep on hearing about the oysters.
Okay, so the whole idea about the oyster was, and I've accused Richard of creating this restaurant just so he could have char-grilled oysters and a big old pork chop. Because we do pork here because pork came to America through Tampa Bay.
Okay. Didn't I know that?
All the pigs in America that were wild at one time came from Spanish explorers who brought them from Spain.
Okay. Makes sense.
So it came through Tampa Bay. DeSoto brought them. So we, you know, basically what we're doing is we're reflecting not only local food but native food. Obviously, the Tocobagan Indians and all the Indian tribes that lived around the bay at that time, they ate tons of oysters. That's why you see the oyster shell, you know, mm-hmm. Indian middens that they built their houses on and whatnot. You know, oysters are a key part of this culture. We're focusing strictly on Gulf oysters,
okay?
Because you know, not only for the story but also because they have a superior kind of brininess to them.
Okay.
And they're also something that you can eat raw as well as, you know, char-grilled. They'll hold up to the char-grill.
Yes.
So the whole idea is, if you know, when you first walked in, you saw the huge stove that we have down there.
And is that what barbacoa is? I keep on seeing
barbacoa. Barbacoa was an Indian name for barbecue. That's like the precursor to barbecue.
Okay.
And the barbacoa is a type of grill. That's why it's called that.
Okay.
So this is a circular, it's got an oyster station, saute, sauce, all that kind of thing. and grill that, you know, it's circular because it represents what, you know, the fires that, that the native people used to cook around. We cook the oysters down there. We put a little bit of garlic parmesan on it.
I'm so hungry right now.
No, dude, wait till you have this. So garlic parmesan.
Oh, man.
And they're great raw. We have a raw bar down there. You could sit there and watch them being shucked.
Yeah.
But the garlic and the parmesan, you get a little flame around them. They cook in the shell.
Yeah.
And the thing about ukulele that I love, among many things, is that people who don't like oysters love the grilled oysters. People who don't like okra love our fried okra. People who don't like, say, or kind of, you know, wince up their face at eating, you know, frog legs or alligator, things like that. We do it in a way that is not only approachable, but it's delicious, and it's kind of in a funky new way. Now, grilled oysters are not anything new. Native people were doing them, too.
Yeah, yeah.
But the way that we're doing them, it is unbelievably sad, and we'll be featuring those at the airport. So you're going to be able to get grilled oysters
coming
in and out of Tampa. That little corner is going to smell like churros and coffee, grilled oysters, and goody-goody burgers and fries.
What about somebody who doesn't wince at anything? Because I'm not a big wincer.
I'm not
scared.
Morning, man.
I'm not scared of much. I'm not. You know, my list. You know, people say, "Hey, do you like?" And I'm like, "Let me stop you."
That's why we're friends.
Yeah, I'm. You know, this is my list of stuff I don't like. This is my list. Okay.
So
liver.
Yeah.
Or gizzards.
Okay.
I don't want that. Okay. I don't want chitlins. I don't like innards.
Yeah.
I don't want stuff inside because there's so many other parts of the pig that are delicious. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I'm not a big fan of beets.
Okay.
But I'll eat them.
Okay.
That's it. I'll eat anything else. I don't care what. If that meat is on the menu, I'll eat it.
So I was like you about that with Brussels sprouts. And then I had someone who made them right. I
love Brussels sprouts.
Made them right.
You got to make them right.
And when you made them right, I had them and you know, grilled and fried or whatever.
Crisped
instead
up.
Of it being in this little meshy kind of
thing. Yeah, they suck
thing.
Like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I loved them so much after I had them made correctly that I started making them at home on the grill.
There you go.
And doing them myself. I had them like probably once a week for about 2 months because I just crave it.
Yeah.
Once you get over a hump of something.
Yeah.
So, you know, like we have a beet salad here.
Yeah.
And in the summertime, it's like you start craving it after you've had it the first time because it's not super vinegary and it's not super sweet. It's just very nicely sliced. We have a couple different kinds of beets and a little bit of salad with it. And it's not an entree, but it's not, you know, this sort of afterthought. It's just, you eat it and you're like, oh, this is the way it should have tasted.
See, I've never had beets to where they, like, wowed me.
Yeah.
I've never said, oh, that's such, those are great beets.
Yeah.
I haven't done that yet. Maybe you guys can do it. You never know.
Yeah, it's possible.
And I'm really excited about the pulpo carpaccio, which is the octopus. I love octopus.
Yeah.
I love it.
So when we started doing octopus, you know, 2.5 years ago, octopus was starting to come on the scene. But it wasn't a widely used thing because a lot of people are like, eh, octopus. Well, when you cook it properly and you do it in a unique way, you know, it's a different kind of experience. And people have this idea of, you know, gelatinous kind of octopus. That's not what this is. So in the years since, it's hard to find a menu at a fine dining place that doesn't have some sort of octopus
on it. A lot of them do lately.
Right.
Yes.
You'll see calamari, which we have. We have squid, but we also have octopus. And it's really interesting to see how people are, it's that, by accepting octopus and enjoying octopus, it makes them a little more adventurous. Well, maybe I'll try this and maybe I'll try that.
Yeah,
so
it's
sort of a gateway appetizer.
Ooh.
The way we do it here, we slice it very thin like meat carpaccio. So we call it pulpo carpaccio.
Okay.
And we circle plate with the carpaccio, and then we have a little bit of what we call piri piri sauce, which is a little spiciness, because the octopus, it's very lean, it's like a giant, you know, muscle, and then, you know, we do what we do to the octopus, but then we serve it cold with the piri piri, and it lights up your tongue, and you're like, oh, big flavor,
really?
You know what I mean? So, I'm not a big spice fan, but I love the piri piri sauce.
See, I love spice.
Yeah.
You can't outspice me.
Okay.
Now, I know you like to cook and grill.
Yeah, I do.
Have you ever cooked octopus? That's something I've never tried myself, and that's one of those things, because I see them, you know, grabbing the octopus, and it just seems like a lot. And, like, the head's on it, and then they're talking about you got to cut out the beak. Like, I don't want to, by accident, not cut out the beak and then bite into a beak.
So most of the part of the octopus that you're eating are the tentacles.
Okay, yeah.
But part of the process of cooking them, and I've not cooked them by, I will tell you this, within the past year, I've watched a bunch of cooking shows and tutorials and stuff because I'm kind of like itching to do it.
I'm going to do it.
But you start by dunking it in boiling water first to kind of tenderize it and clean it.
Okay.
And then you take the tentacles and do what you're going to do with
it.
So you're essentially going to eat just the tentacles.
Just
unlike the squid where you can eat the whole thing.
But where's the beak? In the face.
But you're cutting the beak off from the tentacles. The beak is up in the center part of the octopus. It's not out. There's no beaks out in the arm.
So while we just cut the tentacles off, why are we worried about the beak?
Exactly.
Okay. So that's all I want to know.
But I will tell you this. If you've ever had baby octopus,
I have.
You're eating the whole thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the beak's in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're
not going like, you're not like a little octopus dentist taking beaks out or anything.
You don't think the beak could come out? They cut the beak out.
No.
No?
No. Because it's so small, it doesn't...
Isn't it crunchy, though, the beak?
Yeah. No. Well, I mean, yeah, if you got like a 20-pound octopus, it is.
Sure.
But not like a baby octopus, you know?
Now, I see meatloaf on the menu.
Yes, sir.
I'm a meatloaf fan.
Oh, boy, you're in the right place.
Is it good meatloaf?
So we do great meatloaf here. And we use Florida beef from Strickland Ranch, which is about 40 miles away in Myakka. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a family rancher, Jim Strickland, that we've worked with his family here. We use the same beef over at Goody Goody. But we use that beef for the meatloaf, and it's got great spices in it and whatnot. We do a different version over at Goody Goody with a boiled egg inside of it.
Mm. Boiled
Richard
egg
grew
inside
up
of
with
it.
His mother
okay.
making,
I've seen
making
that.
With boiled eggs.
Yeah, I've seen that.
You're making sandwiches there. But then... After the meatloaf, we throw it on our grill and give it a little grill flavor.
Yes, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. If you love meatloaf and you love grilling, this is the marriage of the two.
My wife the other day, I'm a big green egg guy, and my wife said, how come you're cooking so early? Well, I cooked the meatloaf, then let it sit.
Yeah.
Then I cut it, and then I put it on a cast iron skillet, and then got a little crust on it. That's what it's about. It's about
kinda,
that crust, right?
It's kind of we do a little bit here.
Yes. Yeah. It's about that crust. You don't serve me anything. Without a crust.
Well, when you make it with you know, the best beef, that's one thing. It's not like you're using this ground chuck kind of stuff. So it's not greasy. It's got that sort of heartiness of what good beef tastes like. And then you throw in the spices that you normally do for meatloaf. But the grill, I'm telling you, the grill is like magic.
No doubt.
Well, we grill our vegetables here. We grill everything we can grill here that we do, except the ice cream, of course.
You know what makes stuff taste better? When fire kisses it.
It does kiss it.
You gotta let the fire
That's
kiss
the
meat.
Perfect word for it.
Just let the fire kiss the meat.
Have a little smoke.
Okay, and then let the smoke hit it a little bit. That's what it's all about. That's why, you know, my people over there at the Backyard Company, my guy Jim Duval from the Backyard Company, I was talking to him about the XXL Big Green Egg. And he says to me, I'm gonna get one for you. So I have a XXL Big Green Egg coming within the next couple weeks, and I'm pretty darn excited about that.
So,
pretty darn excited.
So I don't have an egg. I've always had this dream of an egg.
Sure.
But I use this little sort of refrigerator size, you know, small, tiny refrigerator, dorm refrigerator size smoker. And I'm like, man, if
you
I can get this
brilliant.
Out of this.
You could be brilliant on that. You could be brilliant on
no,
that.
No, absolutely. If I can get it out of this, you know. But
imagine.
I've seen you use the egg and you're a master.
I mean, I'm not going to master, but I've been messing with
I've
it for a little bit.
That starter stick
the whole thing. The infrared starter.
I watch you and I'm like, man, I got to tune it
well,
up.
Yeah, when I grow up, I'm going to get me an infrared starter. But, I do love to grill, and my Big Green Egg is coming. Now, tonight, I'm heading to the Lightning hockey game.
Yeah.
And I remember way back when we did our first show, and I gave you a present. Remember what my present was? Remember what the present I gave you? Remember what that was?
Oh,
I have another
You're
one for
make
you.
Me cry again.
I have another one
You're
for you.
Make me cry.
Because Jeff was like, I got a big head. And I go, well, I got a big head too.
Dude, it's what we bonded over.
Exactly.
I was talking with my wife about it this morning. I said, Grace, I'm going to see you. And she goes, are you going to wear the hat?
You're going to wear
the hat? Tell him I wear the dignitary hat.
Well, you don't have to wear the hat because I bought this hat, and this hat is too big for me.
Oh, brother.
It's too big for me.
So you know it's going to fit.
I want you to look at this hat right here. Tell me this hat ain't pimp right there. Look at that.
Dude, Do I have bumps?
Look at, you know, every time I wear this hat, people are like, where'd you get it? That is a pink and black Lightning hat.
Eight and a quarter.
Let me see what it does. What? Just like, dude. It's like you're switching to Superman. It's awesome. Look at that. Nah, dude. That's all.
I
Yeah, man.
It's been at least... 36 hours since I've been this happy.
You know what I'm saying? At least, well, you have sex with the other 36 hours.
I didn't say that. I didn't say that. But I'm just saying.
What do you eat?
I'm just saying that this is, for a man who does not fit in the world, to wear something that fits perfectly.
Yeah. It fits perfectly.
It's like prom and wedding and New Year's Eve, and everybody's got fire trucks and homemade beer.
Fireworks and homemade beer.
This is,
good for you.
We'll be friends for life. Now, I'm going to have to go find the appropriate lid for you.
I'm not scared of lids. Eight. I'm an eight. I love me an eight.
I know you.
New era.
I know you do.
New era is a big part of my repertoire.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen me with a hat off?
Never.
It causes a ruckus.
So here's the thing. I had a conversation with somebody in the office the other day. I said, went through and kind of cleaned out a bunch of stuff. And I said, I had to clean out a bunch of hats, but I kept these ones that fit.
Yeah.
And they go, you wear a hat? I'm like, you don't know me.
That's what I'm saying, though. You got different personas. Absolutely. Well, all my personas have hats on.
I have a women's 8 1/4 pink lightning hat on.
Yes.
And I could not be happier.
You know it's not a woman's hat. You know it's not a woman's hat.
I know. It's for breast cancer. I know.
You know you don't want to see a woman with an 8 1/4 head.
No,
I don't.
That's what I'm saying. You don't. That takes confidence. Yeah.
Well, the pink is not a woman's color. That's a manly color.
This is going to be on my head at least through Christmas.
I love it.
I'm wearing this to church.
I love it.
I'm showering in this mother.
So now, you came.
Thank you.
No, my pleasure.
The thing I didn't say was thank you.
Yeah, no. No, I it makes me feel good when I see you feel good.
Chills.
That's what it's about.
Chill bumps.
That's a good thing. Now, I know you love music like I do.
I do.
I'm starting to DJ, and you came to my first
DJing
outing.
You were throwing down some serious vibe.
But you knew it all, though. So where did you grow up to where you knew, I'll be sure and stuff like that? Where did you grow up?
So my family was in the bar business.
Okay.
And they still are out in Paso Grill. You know the Hurricane?
Oh, so you're from this area?
Yeah. So I was the first busboy of the Hurricane. My great-grandfather built the hotel and the bar that was next to it back in the 40s and 50s. And so whenever they would change out the jukebox, I got all the 45s.
Nice.
All of them.
Really?
So I got, Mandy, You're a Fine Girl. I got all the Sam and Dave records. I got everything. So it's just, it fed an appetite.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 80s, man, I was the guy who watched BET videos.
Nice.
And I'll Be Sure and Johnny Gill and
all
those.
Man,
I love me some Johnny Gill.
Yeah.
Did you watch the New Edition series?
I heard it was excellent.
You've got to watch the New
Edition.
Yes, they actually nailed it.
Did they really?
Ralph Tresvant, I mean, that and Johnny Gill thing, there's a little friction there. It's a great story.
See, Ralph Tresvant is probably one of the guys that was such a big part, but not many people know of Ralph Tresvant. Like, he went on his own and did some beautiful stuff
himself.
He tried
to go on his own.
Well,
he did a couple hits.
A couple.
Yeah.
It didn't work out like he wanted to, but it normally doesn't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But there's so much talent in that group. And
they were enormous talents.
Yeah.
From the beginning.
I played a Jermaine Jackson song.
Yeah.
Okay. Do What You Do. And I said, who knows who this
did.
And you put your hand up immediately.
Right here, man.
Jermaine Jackson, that's when your lovely wife won that hat.
Yes, it is. So the other part of it is I was a massive Prince fan.
Me too.
And all the offshoots from the group that actually originally recorded Nothing Compares to You, The Family.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, back of the original kind of stuff. So I was like a Prince nerd like you wouldn't believe. So that deep dive kind of went into that whole avenue there. Jermaine, all the guys from the time had split up and made stuff.
Yeah,
and
Ready for the World and
ready
stuff
for
like
the world.
That.
I bought a Des Dickerson album. That's how deep
Des
I went.
Dickerson.
Des Dickerson. Guitars for Prince
in
the original Revolution.
Really?
Yeah.
So you dug into it like that. You were deeper than I was.
And Jermaine Johnson, who was the guitarist for the time. That's how bad it was.
That. Yeah. I remember that. Well, you're digging deep. You know what's funny is I dug deep in like Led Zeppelin. You know what I mean?
I eventually got there.
Yeah. So I was there pretty early.
But the other formative moment was in the 80s when there was an infomercial for Sexy Soul Classics. And he says, hey, can I borrow this? No, my brother, you have to get your own.
Sexy
remember
Soul.
That?
I don't remember that.
Dude, I will send you the YouTube link.
Sexy Soul Classics.
So it's like the Delphonics.
Okay.
And Lonely Girl. Love all that kind of stuff. So there was like a 4-album set. So I went into that. I went to doo-wop, you name it. But there was just so much great music back then. And I still got it, squirreled away in my garage. And I don't get to listen to it much.
You got
to
bring them out.
I do it on Sirius.
Yeah,
I do it on Sirius.
It's pretty easy now.
I listen sometimes to Shade.
Uh-huh.
Shade's pretty...
I've never got into Sirius. I
but
should.
But then there's the old classics, the Soul Town. That's really hot.
You do the old school hip-hop, too?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, you do, don't you? You like the old school hip-hop.
Stop what you're doing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I'm about to ruin this boring-ass podcast that you used to.
I love it. I love it. So you're sitting... I can just see...
I remember doing... Rapper's Delight at summer camp. Catholic summer camp. Mm-hmm. There is nothing more white than a white boy saying Rapper's Delight word for word.
That was way back. I think when Rapper's Delight came out, I think I was 12, I think.
I did not know this until recently that hip hop, the phrase came from that song. Because it starts out hip hop.
I don't think I knew that either. You got it. To the rhythm of the boogity beat.
Yep.
Where was the first song that had hip hop in it? You remember?
That was it.
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
Oh, was it Africa?
Nope.
No.
Blondie's Rapture. Fab Five Freddy did it. That was the first public song with hip hop in it.
Sugar Hill King.
Nope.
You might want to talk to me about Questlove.
Okay. I'm not gonna dog out Questlove. Well, that's where they got the word from.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it was the first time.
No.
You know?
No.
Back in the day, they were just spitting. They were just spitting on the corner.
Look at us talking about meatloaf and rap.
No, I love it. I love it. And you know what was great? When I got to junior college, would have been 1986,
yeah.
A buddy of mine was from New Jersey. And he said, yo, you like rap music? And I'm like, at the time, it really didn't exist that much. I go, yeah, I love it. He goes, here's a cassette. And he gave me a cassette. And it had, Boogie Down Productions and Eric B. and Rakim and all that old school stuff from New Jersey before it came out. Okay, so he just basically taped it from the radio. Curtis Blow, LL Cool J, all that stuff. So I heard it before it became, got to the masses. So, I mean, I could say that I was on hip hop.
You want to see Mrs. Howcrock out, put on Going Back to Cali.
Oh, yeah?
I don't think it's a beautiful song. I don't think so.
It's a beautiful song.
Oh, it's an awesome song.
The white girl that dances in that video, yeah. I still have a crush on
Heels
her.
Heels.
Yeah. Yeah.
She like
the ocean. I love it. Ah, see, now we're going to go here and there and everywhere. But we're here at Eulalie hanging out with Jeff Houck and... what room is this called here? It has all this sports memorabilia. It has hockey, baseball.
So all the art that you're going to see at Eulalie downstairs on the first floor, it's all from Richard Gonsmart's collection. Everything from the giant metal horse to the huge paintings downstairs. He's a big arts benefactor. But upstairs is really his slice of his memorabilia collection. Baseballs, bats, jerseys. We're going to have Vinny LeCavalier's jersey here soon.
Nice.
But a bunch of Lightning jerseys. A lot of the Lightning players like to come here. The entire Buccaneers offensive line came here one night.
All the smart guys.
The smartest.
Yeah, I know.
And they sang happy birthday to Casey Gonsmart's wife on her birthday.
Really?
And it was like, you've lost that love and feeling.
I love it.
Yeah, the other night, I guess it was probably about 6 months ago, with Derek Jeter's jersey over here. So I don't know who the smart guy was, but they put Derek seated with his wife underneath the jersey.
Oh, really?
And that night, this is a true story.
Took a picture?
Well, nobody. Nobody takes a picture of Derek in here. We don't let them. This is the story, though.
Okay.
So that night, we had a scout from MSNBC coming because the Florida primary is coming up, and they were going to set up right where we're sitting over with Andrea Mitchell and all the political people.
Yeah.
And they started taking scouting photos, and Derek caught up and was like, no. And we're like, sorry. We didn't mean it. It's not for you. It's
okay,
for this.
Yeah,
and
he's
like, okay, cool. But it's like, don't see Derek Jeter underneath the jersey.
No.
He comes in here quite a bit, and he's a great supporter. And he dropped by Goody Goody when we were in the construction phase, and said I'm watching, and all that stuff. And,
well, I was gonna complain and say you don't have any orange jerseys, but I looked over there and I do see great Leroy Selman.
Leroy was a great friend of Richard's.
Well, I mean, I have Leroy Selman in a very small group of super fantastic people that I've known.
Being, man.
Yeah, man.
Not football. That's just
no. I talked to Leroy a dozen times. I don't think we ever talked about football.
No, yeah. And that's not who he was.
No,
he he and Richard were very much in the same circle because Richard's a huge supporter of University of South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And,
did he go there?
He did.
Did he
For a time, he graduated. He also went to the University of Colorado, but he considers USF his home base.
Sure.
Anyway, he knew Leroy very well. And they recently, Richard wrote an op-ed about someone who was shot outside of Ybor a couple weeks ago, a young man who Richard tried to mentor, and that Leroy was one of his mentors until Leroy died and that kind of thing. But Leroy is, I had the pleasure of knowing him through food, and I would sit and do tastings at Leroy Selman's with him, and he could not have been any more loving and gentle. I sat with him. They did a big event up in Carrollwood, and it was Dewey, Leroy, and Lucius.
They weren't all like that, though. They couldn't have all been like that.
Now, Dewey was.
Really?
Dewey is a beautiful man. And Lucius is like a human bicep. I mean, you mess with Lucius.
I could see that.
And Lucius was tougher than both of them put together, but he could not have been any more generous either. But I got to... Leroy had to step aside 1 second, and then there was like a big plate of nachos. And Lucius and Dewey looked at each other like they were 4 years old, and they put jalapeno juice all over the nachos and watched... like cackling as Leroy ate these nachos and he hated
spicy
his
food.
His mouth blew up and he's like, "What is going?" You know, they just, I mean, they were just such a beautiful family.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I've met Leroy quite a few times, and he's just one of those guys that, like, when you're finished talking to him, you're like, I got to become better. I got to become a better person.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
And I can't, when I first met him, I was like, that can't be the same Leroy Selman.
I thought I was generous and kind. No. Leroy was it.
Not that kind. But I've actually talked to people that worked for him at Leroy Selman's. And I talked to the bartender and I said, hey, has Leroy ever yelled at you? And she looked at me. She goes, what? And I go, has he ever yelled? She goes, sir. She goes, let me tell you something, okay? Every time I see him, he acts like it's the first time he's met me. And he asked me about my family. And he'll give me a big hug. And I go, always? She goes, always. And I was like,
So as a kid who grew up in Tampa Bay, I used to have a Dave Pear jersey.
Dave Pear. I haven't heard that name in a while.
Nose tackle. I want to be a nose tackle.
Okay, yeah. You didn't have much choice.
No.
Yeah. So they weren't going to let you touch the ball.
No. So I told this to Leroy. And he goes, well, Dave Pear, well, that's okay. You know, he was very nice about it. And I said, you know, growing up, and I'm taller. I was taller than Leroy, which freaked me out. He was not a big man at his later years. He was very slender and fit. Crazy fit.
Yeah.
But he looked like he could have stepped on the field.
Sure.
But the difference, you know, is that he had these massive hands. If you shook his hand, it like wrapped around your hands. And I, you know, I don't have small hands. Mm-hmm. And for Leroy to surround my hand,
Did he really?
But it was so gentle. I'll never forget that handshake.
Wow.
He was just so gentle in everything that he did.
Yeah.
I could not imagine him playing the way he did on that field every year.
You saying I don't have small hands is the understatement of the of ever. Because you got some mitts on you, dude.
I don't like to brag.
Okay. it's all good.
You know what they say, big hands, big hat.
That's what they said. Yeah. These
are 8 1/4 hands.
Yes, man. You definitely have both of those. Now, you know, Leroy Selman, you know, for those who don't know much about Leroy, he's a Hall of Famer, played here with the Buccaneers. Beautiful man. He did pass. You know, when people ask me, you know, what was Leroy about, I tell them how sweet he was. And to justify how he was as a football player, which I really shouldn't have to. You know, but a lot of people didn't get a chance to see him play.
Right.
I said, well, you know, I got a chance to play with maybe one of the best tackles ever with Anthony Munoz at the end of his career. Didn't actually get a chance to play beside him. He got hurt in preseason, but was with him. And I said, Anthony, come here. I said, who's the best player I ever played against? And he looked at me and he said, Leroy Selman. And I go, seriously? He goes, yeah. He goes, back in the day, Leroy was a monster.
Leroy played with Dewey.
Yeah.
Dewey was at linebacker. He had probably the worst surrounding group. It wasn't like there were four monsters on the line.
No.
It was him holding up the entire defense.
Just smashing people, though.
And he just somehow was able to swim his way through and just wreck the joint.
And you could probably compare him to Reggie White to where, you know, off the field. But Reggie was kind of a stoic type of dude. Leroy's just, he was a sweet man.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the thing was, when I think of Leroy and when he used to play, I mean, I still have when they played the Pro Bowl in Tampa the one year, I still have my program, I still have my Polaroids.
I didn't know they played a Pro Bowl here.
Yeah, they played it one time.
Really?
And then, I went down to the field and shot Polaroids of Lynn Swan and everybody like that. Franco was there, and Leroy was there. And I just remember thinking, okay, Leroy thinks about what he's doing, and then he kind of finds his way. Where Reggie, I mean, Reggie was quick and Reggie was big. Mm-hmm. Leroy just wasn't big. He looked big with the pads and everything because he wore these giant pads, but he just was so smart and so fast.
Yeah. He was an SOB, too.
He didn't knock people over. He got around you quicker than you thought he could.
Well, I mean, he probably had a Lawrence Taylor feel to him. Like, a lot of those guys, they'll still run through you. They'll still run through you. Like, when those guys are fast like Lawrence Taylor, he'll get around you.
Yeah.
Then you get yourself a little light on your heels, and then he runs you square over.
But you know, Leroy, I remember him wearing, he had those, you know, high pads on his forearm and things like that. He wasn't a guy to stand over you and dance or anything. He just went back to the huddle and did it again.
Yeah, with the J pads and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Look, back in the day, you know, growing up, I used to be Leroy Selman. Yeah. I remember being Leroy Selman in Montreal, Canada. And then when I finally met the dude, and I remember having Tony Mayberry beside me. I go, that can't be Leroy Selman, that mean SOB. Yeah. That's Leroy Selman. And he just was so, God bless you, and, you know, stay healthy. And he was just like, I'm tripping out, man.
Yeah, and it reflected everything that he did. You know, he just, whether it was USF, he was always going to be a success no matter what he did, including restaurants.
Sure.
You know, he didn't know about restaurants, but he knew about food and he knew about people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to see Leroy Selman try and walk through his own dining room, it was like a welcoming a king. And he could not have been any more warm or gracious to everybody who was in there.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him one time when I was having a tasting with him. He walked from the bar over at the Selman's on Boy Scout. He walked from the bar to my table, and it took a half an hour.
Yeah.
And he didn't mind.
No.
And he wasn't in any hurry. Mm-hmm. It was just like, these are my friends. They came here. I asked him one time, I said, what would your mom think? Because it was all inspired. All the cooking was inspired by his mom.
Uh-huh.
I said, did your mom ever make nachos? He goes, well, I can't say she did, but I think she would have enjoyed them. Which is his way of saying, this is true. It's just not exactly. And he didn't want to lie, but he didn't want to say things too far out of bounds.
Sure.
It's like, man, this is just a like I said, a human being. You want to be around, it makes you want to be better.
No doubt. And his food is excellent over there at Leroy Selman's.
Yeah.
And you know, there's so much wonderful food happening in the Bay Area. Since you grew up here, you saw the evolution. You've seen what's happened.
Oh, yeah.
I remember when I was at One Buck Place, which used to be probably right about the old International Plaza. It's International Plaza area right there.
Yeah.
You know, and we used to go up and down. We used to have to go to Sizzler to get something to eat because there was nothing on Boy Scout to eat. Nothing. And now you go down Boy Scout, we got Eddie V's, we got Fleming's, we got Leroy Salmon's, we got Kona Grill. We got so much happening now in this area. It's amazing what's happening in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, and it's the great part about it is that, you know, you're going to have your concepts out there, but only a couple blocks away is one of the best barbecue joints, I think, in town that nobody knows about. And it's only basically for the neighborhood.
Let's hear it.
The guys at Cigar City took me there one time, and I can't even remember the name. It's so good.
But please tell me where it is.
I'm going to take you there.
Please.
But basically what it is you find people who live and work in that area, and they're like, we're going to go find a little mom-and-pop place, a little mom-and-pop place.
Where is it?
I'm telling you, if you go down the street that takes you to Cigar City, you keep going down for probably another 2 miles.
I know exactly
miles.
What it is. Yeah. Is it 2 miles? Or
yeah.
It's a little less than that.
It's in
the hood.
No, it's deep.
I know. It's in Cigar City. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. And it's just real, and it's good.
Yeah, man.
And they make their own sweet potato pies.
Nothing but black folks.
That's where all the good food is, man. That's where all the good food is. Dude, I went to a barbecue place. This is not a joke.
Yeah.
There's a barbecue place up off, Spruce.
Okay.
Not Spruce. It's way up north.
Bushby
anyway,
Downs, Sarah.
No, it's not even that far north. So you go straight up 22nd, you make a left. And it's I've tried to. Someone told me about this place, and I've been there three times during what they said was business hours.
And they were closed.
They were closed. Fourth time I went, they were open. I go, you weren't open.
Yeah, it happens.
It happens.
Yeah.
But they've been there for 6 years, so they're doing something right in the neighborhood. Loves
them,
you know?
They don't care.
No.
Well, I tell you what, barbecue is something that I love.
Yeah.
I love.
Yeah.
We did the first podcast we did Flavor in the Year, we did from Smoking Aces in Plant City.
Yeah.
Have you been to that?
Yeah. Well, no, I haven't been there. I know that you've been there and you love it.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
My guy Robert does it real, real nice. And there's so many. I had lunch with DeMar Dotson from the Buccaneers.
Yeah.
He's going to be opening a Dickies. And
awesome.
I don't know much about Dickies.
Right.
I guess it's a chain,
yeah.
I guess. But he's going to be opening a Dickies, I guess, in the Bush area or something like that. So everybody's kind of dabbling in barbecue. There's not a lot of good, great barbecue in the Tampa Bay area.
Barbecue is a very deceptively difficult cuisine because you got to start yesterday to serve today.
Correct.
And you don't know how many people come today. So you could over-prepare and then wind up wasting food or under-prepare and not make any money.
Sure.
You got to know your customers. You got to know what the demand is. And you also have to make good stuff. I will tell you this. The fourth time I went to that barbecue, I'm not going to tell you the name because it was the worst barbecue I've ever had.
Was it really?
Everything was like very, very dry.
Ugh.
And I was really disappointed. And I was like, because I had taken pictures. I'm like, this looks like what good barbecue should
be. It's not?
No. But I'm going back because maybe they had an off day.
Are you allowed to have an off day?
You're not, except in my book, because I know how hard it is to be a restaurateur in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Not on Dale Mabry, not on Kennedy or anything like that. I might have gotten served the newcomer special. I don't know. So if I go back, maybe I'll get the one that's less chewy. I don't know.
See, now, I went, I don't like to blow people up, okay? So I, like, when
no,
I
don't either.
I don't.
Okay, I'd rather talk nice.
Yeah, I'd like to do the nice thing, okay? And I actually know the owner of this place, so I'm definitely not going to bring the name up. But I was exposed to this barbecue place, and the first time I had it, I'm like, this is cool, this is good. Yeah. And I went back about 2 months ago, and I got a half chicken and some greens, all right? Seemed easy. I got, let me get a half chicken and some greens. Going to try to keep it a little healthy. And I hear lady in the back, throw it on the grill for a minute. And I was like, okay.
Oh,
so then I get my half chicken. And, you know, if you get a really good smoked half chicken, you can almost put it in your hand and it will open up.
Yeah.
You know, but it's so tender. I could barely peel the meat off of this chicken.
Yeah,
and it wasn't even lukewarm. It was cold. I won't go back. That's how funny I am. I won't go back.
Yeah, I know, and I feel that. And it, I mean, at least you had the previous experience that it was good. I will say this: the here's how much I want to give them credit.
Okay,
the macaroni salad was awesome.
Okay,
so I'm like, okay, well that's
cold macaroni salad. Cold macaroni salad.
Yeah.
Okay,
it was good because I've had the hot mac at like what's the place in. Oh God! Why is my barbecue memory going out on me today?
Yeah, we're all getting old.
The barbecue in Brandon.
First choice, yes.
They do that hot mac that's really good, spicy
good.
Mac.
Okay, oh. Nice.
That and the greens, I'm in. I'll go back. I'll give it another chance, see if it's okay. But
you're nicer than me. I'm not going back.
But barbecue is just such a hard thing to do right consistently.
It is.
You might have a good day and a bad day, but you know you got to hit at least 2 out of 3.
People don't realize, I mean, if you go to a burger place, you can literally pull a burger out of a freezer, okay?
Right.
You can't pull ribs out of a freezer.
Well, I mean, people who love burgers know the difference. Like a Eulalie and a Goody Goody, our beef is never frozen.
Okay.
And the difference between never frozen and frozen is massive.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a frozen burger, 9 times out of 10, there's 10,000 ingredients on top of that burger to hide the fact that it's a frozen burger.
Okay.
This one, if you can't ride with like a little bit of this and a little bit of that, we're not going
to
do it.
I had a Goody Goody burger the other day, I was telling you, and I wasn't ready to be impressed. I was thoroughly impressed by this burger. I don't know if it was a double burger or whatever, but I picked it up and I like a substantial burger. And it's a hefty, substantial burger. It's delicious.
So that's our POX burger.
Okay.
And it's pickles, onions, and X's special sauce called the Pox. And people used to get sacks of them. Back when Goody Goody, you know, it opened in 1925, and they had several locations. The last one was on Florida, and they closed in 2005. They took a lot of shortcuts sometimes. Mm. I mean, God bless them. You know, that was the time they were in. Just about like 99% of everything we do is scratch.
Mm-hmm.
So you have giant pancakes and everything like that. Well, the burger, it took us a long time to get that right. To do something that looks simple takes a lot of work to get it right consistently.
Sure.
So the secret sauce, we had to make sure we nailed that. But it's just, the POX burger is just a patty, pickles, onions, and that secret sauce.
And the secret sauce is ketchup, mayonnaise, and relish.
Don't know.
You have no idea.
No idea. It's not a marinara.
Okay.
People said it's a marinara.
Okay.
It's not a marinara.
So it's a red sauce.
It's a red sauce.
Okay.
It's tomato-based, but it's not a marinara, and it's not ketchup. So I have no idea what it is, and that's the God's honest truth.
Really?
But I will tell you this, that it was harder to recreate the burger than it was to build the place.
Because really?
People have this sense memory of it, and invariably, if you go on the Goody Goody Facebook page or whatever, people say, I finally got to Goody Goody, I tried it. It's exactly the way I remember it, which is really hard because people build it up in their head.
Sure, absolutely.
You know?
I know that's important. And here at Ulele, you guys are doing specific things. I mean, I know you have a different coffee that you guys outsource.
Well, before we get to that,
yes.
You haven't had a Ulele burger.
I haven't. What makes it special? What makes it special?
Yeah. You'll see.
You know I'm a burger connoisseur, right?
Yes.
That's kind of my thing.
I like to think of myself as somewhat in that neighborhood.
You're pretty good.
I've thrown down some. Burger filter.
Seriously.
But the Ulele burger here is so good, and it's because we use fried shallots on it.
Oh, yeah.
A little crispiness.
Yes.
And then, you know, the beef is a nice thick patty, and the bun is like a brioche bun. Oh, man.
We'll see the brioche bun.
You'll see.
See, I don't like too much of a bun, but that brioche is perfect.
It's got that little buttery.
Yes.
I'm sorry. You want to talk about coffee?
Yes, you guys. I guess you outsource your coffee from local cats.
Well, in Ybor City since 1921, there's been a place called Naviera Coffee.
And where is that? It's on 7th?
It's on 7th. It's almost to 21st Street. And they're in the process of actually moving. It was my favorite little coffee joint in Tampa. It's like, it's so Tampa, you can't even believe it. I mean, the ceilings are real low. Everything was like particle board kind of thing. But they roasted coffee. And
how far is it from Columbia on 7th?
Probably about 300 steps.
Oh, so it's pretty close.
So since 1981, I believe, they've been supplying all the coffee to all the Columbias. And then when we open here, we have Naviera Coffee. And then Goody Goody also has Naviera Coffee. And we'll be doing Café con Leche at Café con Leche using Naviera Coffee. Because they blend it to our specifications. They do it exactly right. They get it right up to the point, you know, where we want it either for American or Cuban style. They do all our espresso, all things like that. But Danny Fernandez, his family's owned it for, I think, 3 generations. And they're in the process of moving to a bigger facility because they're maxed out.
Sure.
As the coffee boom has kind of happened, they've maxed out. But that coffee is just incredible, and we serve it here.
Wonderful. Yeah. Tell me about you have your own Ulele beer now. You know, Tampa Bay is now it's blossoming as far as craft beer going on, and we're a little bit late. Okay, it's happened. Nationwide, a lot of places, a lot sooner than it's happened here. But since, Cigar City has flourished and Cigar City is, pretty much the beer of this whole state.
They're the star that all the beer wise men follow.
Yeah, you're trying to be Joey Redner and Joe Redner when you grow up.
Yeah.
And they just got a little chunk of change, I believe, for selling that thing.
They got a good chunk.
They're popping up everywhere. And you know what? Good quality beer. We're pretty good at what we do here at Tampa Bay.
Well, the nice thing about having a Cigar City is that a lot of brewers who kind of cut their teeth over there went and made other breweries.
Yes.
So it seeded the clouds. And the thing that Cigar City, as opposed to other businesses, they didn't see those people as competition. They realized if we make a bigger cloud, there's more rain.
Sure. Yeah.
So now there's what I call a little brew belt that goes all the way from St. Petersburg to, say, Jacksonville.
Okay.
All along I-4 and 95, there's incredible craft beers being made. Mm-hmm. And then a little bit down in South Florida.
Sarasota?
A little bit of Sarasota. Because you got Sarasota and Bradenton with Big Top and the Proving Guy, Darwin's, does great beer. But it's really Cigar City that helped kind of foster this atmosphere. So we realized that we couldn't open this restaurant 2.5 years ago without having beer.
Okay.
Craft beer was a huge part of it. So we built the facility. Tim Shackton is our brewmaster. He makes 7 core beers, all different kinds of, like a red lager. We have one called Hydration Station.
It's called Ulele?
Ulele Spring Brewery.
You guys have 7 of your own beers.
Yeah, I'm going to take you back. You're gonna
Wow, that's amazing.
So we do barrel aging. We do special, kind of issues. But we have a wide range of beers to complement. And the difference is that, say, okay, Cigar City's great. Cigar City doesn't have food. They have food trailers that come in and out.
Correct.
So this brewmaster works with our executive chef, Eric Lackey, and they coordinate. It's like, okay, well, if you're going to make this, well, maybe I'll make some of this, and this goes better with that.
Sure,
So it's a holistic approach, though. You're not drinking a beer that just so happens to go with that. This is from intention. This is from the
point. So you're actually pairing beers with food? Yeah. Do you pair them on the menu?
Our servers help with that.
Okay.
We have some of that that is in our new drink book that we have here in our new beer and wine book, beer and wine menu. But the thing that's great about it, Tim, you remember a chain that was called Hops?
Absolutely.
Hops.
They had the best little rolls, little sweet rolls.
But they were the first sort of microbrewery in this area that became a chain.
Correct. Yes.
Tim was a brewmaster for them for many, many years.
Okay.
And so we picked him up after Hops left the scene. And he's been our brewmaster since day one, but he does incredible beers. There's one that we've won. Well, we've won several awards for our Eulalie Light, our Eulalie Pale Lager. We do one that's called Hydration Station that I had to brag about. Okay, so when we serve all our beers, and then we had a couple in bottle, and one of them was Mick Ultra for athletes.
Okay,
because so many people run and bike and do all the Riverwalk stuff, and we're like, well, we can make an Ultra, but that one doesn't have any flavor. We can make one with flavor.
Is it that light?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I'm excited about
that. So it's low carb, low calorie and everything, but it's got craft beer flavor.
Ooh.
So Hydration Station, we're going to be serving that actually this weekend at the Gasparilla Distance Classic.
Yeah.
In Okeechobee Park. We'll be serving that for runners, people actually running in the race. But it's been a huge hit for us because it's this beer that's very approachable. It kind of pairs well with a bunch of different things on the menu because it's light and it's great during summer. But that's the kind of flexibility we have. We're going to be serving Eulalie-inspired beers at the airport, at the Eulalie out there. Mm-hmm. So beer is very much a part of what we do. And when I take you down for a tour, you're going to see this huge brewery down here. It used to be, that room used to be the city's television studio. And then we took it over. When we took it over, not many people know this, we had to do, this building is so old there weren't, architectural drawings.
Sure.
So we went over there. When we did our little, workup on it, we found that there was a 14-foot-thick cement footer in that room.
Really?
And everybody's like, what's under here? Like, I don't know. So we dug it all out, and then I'll show you the photo later. There's all these old pipes that we had to dig out that were basically the water plant pipes.
Sure.
And you can see pieces of them that are out in the garden out here that we use them as sort of like sculpture. But we had to rebuild the whole thing and then start the brewery. But this place, the beer, let's put it this way. The beer that was used to brew in Tampa at the old Tampa brewery, the water came from this plant.
Wow.
And the people who founded the Columbia in 1905 had been brewers at that place. So it's like this holistic kind of thing where they used to brew beer, then they went into the saloon and then the restaurant business.
The Columbia's been around since 1905?
1905.
So
the same day that the Wright brothers flew was the day we opened the Columbia.
Really? And now, was it Richard Gonsmart's family?
It's his great-grandfather.
His great-grandfather. Yep.
This is fifth generation.
Wow. That's amazing.
And his... his approach is similar to all it is down the line is the family has this, kind of push for excellence. Ybor City at that point, they were really at the eastern edge of Ybor City.
Mm-hmm.
And across from that lot where the parking is now was a place that people used to, rest and feed their horses. It was like a stable. One of the people who rested and fed his horses there was Teddy Roosevelt. So you'll see a marker out there.
Good name.
I mean, it goes back and back and back like you can't believe, but... Again, there's a narrative that kind of runs through Eulalie and Columbia and goody goody that, this is what Tampa is. And,
There's no doubt. Like I said, you can't bring up the lore of Tampa without bringing up Richard Gonsmart.
Yeah.
Now, you guys have your own beer. We have, some local coffee.
We do craft cocktails.
Bourbon seems to be like the in thing going on these days. Is this like a fad, or how long has bourbon been hot? Bourbon's hot right now.
Bourbon's hot again for a lot of different reasons. The thing about Richard Gonsmart is that if something doesn't meet his standards, he just goes and does it himself.
Okay.
So, when it came time to open Eulalie, we went to Tennessee and picked out the Knob Creek barrel that we were going to use for our private issue.
Really?
We went to Mexico and got the tequila from Patron themselves to have the barrel. And then we used the barrels to age some beer, so
sure.
It tasted like, those flavors.
Mm-hmm.
But bourbon is a big thing. A lot of people overpay for bourbon. This is a place where you're going to find bourbon that's been hand-selected specifically for these cocktails and for drinking, because not every bourbon is great.
I see the Elijah Craig, 23 years, $56.
Baby.
But everything else is, $12 or lower.
And the thing is, it's a bargain at that price.
At $56.
I'm telling you.
That's like a couple ounces?
So we use Elijah Craig in several of our cocktails.
Oh, really?
We do a Magby Manhattan, named after the former mayor of Tampa,
mm-hmm.
who was tarred and feathered because he was a drunk.
Okay.
Magby, Eulalie Spring used to be called Magby Spring up until the 80s when an Eagle Scout convinced the city council to change the name because it wasn't really the most positive image. But but the Elijah Craig is a wonderful whiskey. We use as much as we can out of Knob Creek, obviously. Several other kind of brands that we have that are premium brands.
Now,
it's not. But to answer your question, it's not a fad. You know why? It's like everything else right now that's handcrafted. Not only does it have a story, and sometimes if you read a book called Bourbon Empire, which I highly suggest, people like to have stories with their alcohol. Some of them are more authentic than others.
Sure.
So something like a Pappy Van Winkle, which is like...
Which you can't get.
The Lexus of,
you can't get it.
Bourbon,
yeah.
Or whatever you want
have
to call
it. Have you had it?
I have.
Is it fantastic?
It's everything you ever thought about.
Really?
It's like drinking Angel Tears.
See, now, I haven't had Angel Tears since yesterday.
Yeah. A little ice cube and some Angel Tears will set your day off.
So it's that...
It's the real deal.
You can't get it, though.
You know who Pappy Van Winkle was?
I don't.
Marketer. He was a marketing guy back in the early 1900s.
That's it?
After Prohibition.
That's it.
And he made a little bit, but it wasn't like, Pappy started this, now it's Pappy. Yeah. No. They just used the guy because he had a cool face.
Is it expensive because you...
Insanely expensive. It's like criminally expensive, and it's so worth it.
It's worth it, isn't it?
The thing you need to learn about food, I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about everybody, and I've had to learn it too, is once you've had the real deal, you realize the value. The problem is we eat so much terrible food that when we eat good food and we pay a little more for it, we feel a little guilty.
Sure.
If all you had done is eat the good food, and I'm talking about, you know, how it's grown, how it's harvested, how it's made, everything like that. I'm not saying being an elitist or anything like that. I'm just saying when you eat Brussels sprouts for the first time and it's the real thing and they cook it the right way, you'll pay whatever you want to pay for, for Brussels sprouts.
Correct.
Same thing with bourbon.
Yeah. This is my one thing. I don't like to overpay for a lot of stuff.
Sure.
I'll overpay for food. Like, if it's great... Like, I won't complain. Like, if there's a $60 steak on a menu, okay, and I have it and it's fantastic, boy, I embrace it. Like, somebody, I don't want to pay. I want to pay for something fantastic. I remember the casino, Seminole Hard Rock, back in the day, they had a Kobe burger that was $30.
Yeah.
Ordered it every time.
Right.
And I'm in a lot of ways cheap.
Right.
But for that $30 burger, it made me happy.
Well, and I think a lot of what's going on now is that it used to be that people would brag, oh, I went to Niagara Falls, oh, I went to Europe, I went to Africa, I went to Iceland, whatever it is. Now food is the new souvenir. It's that thing that you can't go and get there because I had it. Anybody can go to Europe. Not everybody can go and have that Kobe burger at that moment in
time.
That's
true.
That's that little slice. Mm-hmm. And not that necessarily you want people to brag about it, but it feels personal to them. Mm-hmm. People don't brag about food that doesn't feel personal.
It makes sense.
It's an intimate thing. You're ingesting it into your body. Mm-hmm. You want it to be worth whatever effort you put into it. And when it tastes great, I'm with you, man. I'll pay for it. I prefer not to.
Yes.
I love it when it tastes like I spent a lot, but it didn't.
Agreed.
And I like to know who's making my food.
Mm-hmm.
But, you take me down to Fish House in Ruskin.
Yeah.
And there's a sweet woman down there who runs a little fried food stand by the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll eat there every time because they're just the sweetest people. The food is unbelievably fresh.
Mm-hmm.
It's not clam strips that, you know, taste like you're eating a piece of bubblegum under the table. You know what I mean?
I've never had clam strips in Wild Meat.
We started when we opened Goody Goody. We had them. Mm-hmm. And they were gigantic and they were tender and they were beautiful. And nobody bought them.
Really?
Because they have this expectation.
Okay.
That can't be a clam strip. Something's wrong there. So we've eaten bad food for so long that we have the wrong expectation instead of being open-minded about what's really good.
Well, I'll tell you what. I like to dabble in this and that, and I like to investigate. When I hear something's wonderful somewhere, I'm the first person to go and check it out. But your thing that I've heard, of a lot of different things, but the oysters is it. And I'm definitely looking forward to indulging in some of those oysters.
Yeah.
And I know hopefully your chef brings us some protein. I'd like to try those big shrimp, too.
Oh, yeah.
They've got the head on them, too, because I will suck the head out them shrimp. I will suck the head.
If you don't, I'll be insulted.
That's what I'm saying, though.
That's where all the good stuff is.
You know, Tony Mayberry, a good friend of mine that I played beside for a while, took me to a sushi joint, and he goes, order the shrimp heads. And I go... What?
Yeah.
He goes, a shrimp head. I go, for what? Yeah. And I didn't get it. And he got an order. He goes, just try one. And it's a fried shrimp head. And I was like, eh. And I tried it, and I got it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
You had them before?
Oh yeah,
they're so good. they're so good.
It feels dirty. It's so good.
It's like I wouldn't have thought about this. Yeah,
not dirty bad, but like, oh my god, I shouldn't feel this good about eating shrimp heads.
Shrimp heads, but it's like this is like the head and the guts and all that stuff.
That's where all the
delicious.
Food, that's all the flavor.
Unbelievable.
That's why when you're eating a crawfish, okay, you're gonna pinch it and get the tail and everything like that. But all the flavors in the head. All the flavors in the head of that thing.
I was watching a Best Thing I Ever Ate, and Duff Goldman, I think his name.
Yeah.
He had shrimp heads on there. I'm like, go on, Duff. What you think?
Shrimp head soup. It'll be the best soup you've
ever
had.
Yeah. Where do they have shrimp head soup?
Well, any place that uses it's a lot of Vietnamese and Asian and Thai.
Yeah.
But basically, you know, it's a home recipe so that you don't waste food. It's like if you eat. Anything with beef stock, well, there's going to be hooves in it. There's going to be all different kinds of stuff.
Absolutely.
Because that's where all the good food is. Mm-hmm. Is in the marrow and how sweet it is. And
old school, they don't waste anything. Vietnamese, they don't waste anything.
It's the whole genesis of French food was all the food that was thrown away by the royalty. Mm. The peasants went and made great stuff out of it. And then they made a bunch of sauces when it didn't taste so great, so it covered up. And then they...
Yeah.
Then they made a cuisine.
Sure. And what do you think barbecue came from? Barbecue came from, you know, basically, you know, the slaves getting the crappy meat. Okay, here is a crappy meat that, you know, has all kind of veins and all kind of crap in it. And they figure out a way to cook it low and slow.
That's all it.
And from that point on...
you can cook brisket. Yeah. I am your man.
That's it. And listen, brisket to me might be the hardest thing on earth to cook. Because I don't know if it has, you know, brisket's perfect for like 5 minutes. You know what I mean? You got to catch brisket perfect. I can honestly say I've never cooked a fantastic brisket.
I only make brisket once a year. When I have like a metal smoker.
Yeah.
And when the weather forecast says it's going to be down in the 20s, I'll put it in.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll sit there for maybe 24, 36 hours because it's cooking it like 170, 180.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about to try it doing it sous vide, which in the water bath.
Do you sous vide stuff? Yeah.
Best asparagus I've ever had.
Sous vide.
Best salmon I've ever had.
Really?
Yep. I have a circulator I just bought within the past 3 or 4 months, and there's just nothing like it because it controls things so precisely.
Mm.
That it's you almost have to retrain your mouth what to expect when you bite into something.
You're gonna have to teach me how to do that.
I will.
I mean, is it a tough process?
No. You get a vacuum sealer with a bag.
Yeah.
You don't even need that. You need a Ziploc and drop it in the water.
And that's it. That's it.
Well, then you need an immersion circulator that circulates the water at a constant temperature. Set it.
That's
walk
it.
Away. Come back.
And that's beautiful. Well, it's time to eat. Here comes a chef with a little bit of food. I'm here with the top chef right now, who's the man with the plan, Eric Lackey, and he's the man. He's going to bring me out a little bit of food right now, and here's Mr. Eric Lackey. How you doing, brother?
Good, doing good.
How's life treating you?
Great.
Excellent.
Blessed.
Now, let me know what you brought me here today, brother. I'm not on a diet today, so bring me some good stuff.
Well, that's
man.
A good thing. Well, we got our house-made meatloaf. It's made with dry-aged ground New York strip. And then we're going to have some of our famous char-grilled oysters, and those are our Louisiana oysters topped with garlic, butter, Parmesan, and Romano cheese. They're absolutely amazing. Even if you're not an oyster eater, you'll love those.
Well, that's not going to be a problem for me because I absolutely love oysters. And I saw these on the grill, and you ain't scared of butter.
No, not at all.
Okay, that's a good thing.
Not
me,
at all.
Me neither. Me
not
neither.
At all.
Now, what you got here?
And then
what
we
you got here?
This is our Popo Carpaccio. So this is a octopus, thinly sliced.
Mm.
Serve a little Wakame seaweed salad and a piri piri sauce. That sauce got a little zing to it.
I'm not scared of zing. I love octopus. I've never seen it that way. Carpaccio.
Carpaccio.
That's
so
wonderful.
Thinly sliced. And then we have our barbacoa shrimp. So this is our Gulf prawn.
Yes.
Served shell and head on. It's pan seared. Then it's in a horseradish butter sauce.
Wonderful. Now, how would you describe as your style of cooking? What's your style of cooking?
Well, you know, what we like to say is we say we're native inspired. We're Florida native inspired. So think about how lucky we are here in the state of Florida for what we have for great shrimp. We have oysters. We have snapper, grouper, pompano out of the other coast. What we have as far as produce and citrus. And then as well as a lot of people don't know, Florida's the second largest cattle producing state in the country. And we were very fortunate. Myself was very fortunate to start a Fresh from Florida cattle program where we have a brewery here on site. We even take our grains from our brewery. We feed our cattle to Strickland Ranch and bring it back to our table. So we're even raising our own cattle.
Yeah,
so.
Jeff was saying that, and as he was explaining that, I said to him, please get me a steak. I got to taste the steak. So I'll be able to tell the difference in the freshness of the steak.
Definitely. I always say, everybody's got a great steak, but I'll put mine against everybody's.
I like that. And then you were talking about dessert that we're going to bring after I get swelled up eating all this stuff. What's the dessert you're going to bring for us?
Well, today we're going to give you one of our signature desserts. It's our maple bacon ice cream. We make all of our ice cream in-house.
Yes.
And then it's rolled in cornflakes, sitting on a bed of a bourbon creme anglaise with a little caramel.
Oh.
It's awesome.
You're showing off now, ain't
you? Yeah, I'm trying to.
That's a wonderful thing. Where is your roots, cooking-wise?
Well, you know, my family's always kind of been in the business. My family's from France, so I grew up in a European household.
Tu parles français?
A little bit.
Okay, there you go.
And so I always kind of been involved with that. I've been in Pinellas County, Hillsborough County since 1989. I moved from West Palm Beach, went to school in Gainesville, University of Florida, then moved here and came down here on spring break and fell in love with the Clearwater area, and here I am.
Here you are, and you're hooked up with Richard Gonsmart. Not a bad guy to hook up with.
An amazing family. Actually, when I first moved here, I worked at the Columbia at the Pier.
Yeah.
I was just a young man then, and, well, I'm not a young man today, but...
Yeah, none of us are, but it's all good. But now you're a wise guy now.
Well,
you're wise.
That's what they tell
and
me.
And while we're talking, I just got to do myself a favor and reach over here and eat one of these oysters here. That's going to burn my mouth, but you know what? I don't care if it's going to burn my mouth. This right here.
It's going to be so delicious.
Mm. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, no. That's the best oyster I've ever had. Oh, my goodness. Oh. Where have that been my whole life? I'll be here eating. Oh, I got a shiver. I got a shiver from the oysters. Now, tell me what you put on the oysters. What you put on there?
So we have a house-made garlic butter. So we put the oyster right on the grill. The grill runs about 600 degrees. We cover each oyster with about an ounce and a half of butter. Then it starts to flame up. Mm. Then we top it off with an ounce of Parmesan Romano cheese, another ounce of butter on top of that. We keep that flame going to get that char. You can see on the bottom of the oysters get a good little char on them.
Yeah, they do.
And then as that oyster starts to pull up, we put a little more butter and then some fresh chopped parsley.
Wow. I mean,
so that
is...
garlic butter and cheese.
That's absolutely fantastic. Now I'm going to reach over here and try on some of this octopus. And what kind of sauce is this?
So that's called a piri piri. So it's a red Thai chili, lemon juice, olive oil, a little bit of garlic.
Whoa. Got a little kick.
It's got a little kick.
Mm.
It definitely does.
Well, you slice the octopus so thin, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost melts in your mouth.
It melts, basically,
Oh, my goodness.
And if you need a little cleanser, if it gets a little hot, you got that little seaweed in there.
Little seaweed in the middle. Yeah.
Tones it down.
Okay. Now I'm going to dip. Oh, look at that. We got a little meatloaf right here.
So you see our meatloaf is grilled. We treat it like a steak. So because we use dry age 21-day New York strip and we grind it to make our meatloaf, so then we take it and then we grill it again to give it that steak feature because it is a steak that we use.
Wow. I tell you what, that's about as tender as it comes with meatloaf. Eric, you do a fantastic job, brother.
Thank you.
I'm going to come back and see you.
We're going to be here.
Don't forget me now.
No, I'm not, and I've got some ice cream coming your way.
That's what I'm talking about, ice cream, and I want to try one of them steaks, too.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to get that done?
No doubt.
All right, brother. We're going to be friends forever.
Sounds good.
It's good to see you, brother.
Good to see you.
Eric Lackey, the head chef over here at Eulalie. Come check him out. I can't wait to have the steak and also the ice cream as well. So, Eulalie, I don't know if I've ever had oysters that good, everybody. Wonderful. Peace. All right. So that was wonderful. And now I'm sitting here indulging in a little of this, a little of that. Now I got to try
the
shrimp with the heads on. Am I supposed to bite the heads off of it, too?
No, you can just pop
the head off.
You know, some people, depending where you're from, a lot of guys from the South, they'll get in there and get that.
They eat the whole thing.
Well, they'll suck that head and get that.
I'm going to suck the head when nobody's watching. Don't worry about that, But I'm not from the South, but I do understand the taste of the whole thing. It tastes like you got it right out of the Gulf.
Yeah, no, they are fresh Gulf prawn, and then leaving that shell on there, you get that nice, more of a seafood flavor than a shrimp flavor because it brings out that natural essence, those oils.
I'm eating the shells too. The shells are still good. I like old school.
Oh yeah,
I'm eating the shells out of it and everything. Wonderful. I've not seen it cooked that way anywhere in Florida, I don't
think. No, you're not going to see that around. That's a pretty unique dish.
That's like you got that from Emerald or something from somewhere in New Orleans.
That's definitely a Louisiana style
no doubt.
Of cooking.
Well, good stuff. This is wonderful, Chef. And I'm going to dig into these mashed potatoes.
White cheddar popcorn mash.
See, I heard, so there's actually popcorn in this?
Yes, we fresh pop popcorn and we grind it, we add it to it, gives a little sweetness to the potato.
Oh my God.
And then loaded with white cheddar, roasted garlic, roasted leeks.
So I'm having an out of body moment with these mashed potatoes. My diet will start again tomorrow. But
you know the old saying, seafood diet. Seafood, I eat.
You ain't lying about that. It's Thursday. It's a bad day. Friday's a bad day to start my diet.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, we'll start it again on Monday. How about that?
Sounds good to me.
Wonderful. Well, Chef, thank you, brother.
I appreciate
it. That's good stuff. I'll tell you what, Eulalie, if you want some wonderful food, this is where it's at, no doubt about that. And this has been wonderful talking to the great Jeff Houck, who knows food like no other. And he represents all the brands here, from Eulalie to Columbia to Goody Goody to Cha-Cha Coconuts, the whole nine yards. And Richard Gonsmart's doing it the right way, and he's been doing it the right way for a long time. This weekend, if you're looking for somewhere to hang out, come hang out at District Tavern. We'll be hanging out there from 11 to 1 on Sunday. I have the great Derek Brooks will be one of my guests. I see his jersey right on the wall right over here. So come hang out from 11 to 1 District Tavern. That's Dignitary Radio. And we like to hang out. We got DJs. We're making a party. It's a beautiful thing. And this is Flavor in Your Ear. Every week, we find some kind of wonderful restaurant in the Bay Area to frequent and eat some wonderful food like we have right here. We got steak coming still, and we got some ice cream as well. I'm excited about that. In the meantime, you guys have a wonderful week. Be safe. Hope to see you on Sunday at District Tavern. And get your ass off the couch and come hang out here at Eulalie. The food is fantastic. Everybody have a wonderful week. Peace out.
To keep the conversation going, follow Ian on Twitter at Ian Beckles and check out DignitaryRadio.com to get the latest on where you can find him next. This has been Ian Beckles, Flavor in Your Ear on Radio Influence.
Put your flavor in your ear, the voice of the people's here is here. Flavor
in your ear,
flavor
in your ear,
bringing that flavor.
This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
What was the worst day that you've ever had in a restaurant?
I was working in Santa Monica, and it was actually the worst, but it in the long run it ended up being great. I was cooking for a chef at a restaurant in Santa Monica. And I was pretty green. It was the early 2000s, and I had reached up to grab some plates. And before this, I had already sauced a plate wrong. I had already given the wrong ingredients to the chef. I just was failing that day. And then I had reached up, and I remember just in like the height of service when everything was happening, there was like probably 15, 20 dishes being made. I broke a bunch of plates right on the line and glass went everywhere. We had to throw everything away. And I remember the chef grabbed me by like underneath my armpit and dragged me outside. And he like literally pulled me in this underground garage that was right next door. And he looked at me and he said, "I don't think this is for you. I think you need to figure out a new career in your life."
Wow.
And I remember it crushed me. I got on my bike and I like rode home and I like cried my eyes out. I was so upset. But from that moment on, I swear to you, there was a fire that was lit that pushed me harder than ever. Because I don't want to say he was a hater, but it certainly became a motivator.
Sure.
And pushed me harder than I've ever been pushed internally. And I think what's hard is, you know, it's tough being, you know, not everyone is hard on themselves, I think, as chefs are. You know, we're very easy to throw a dish out if we're not happy with it or bang our hands on a table because we're so passionate and we want everything to be so perfect because we have one chance to make everything great. So we take everything that much more serious in our lives and to heart because it's a very emotional thing. I don't care if you're cooking bar food or if you're working in a Michelin star restaurant, you should have that same integrity if this is the business you want to work in, because if you don't, you're going to fail.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.